You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is going on, Pacers fans? Welcome in to this Thursday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I am one of your hosts, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8.9 seconds. And today, if you can't tell, I am pretty sick and have a pretty stuffy nose, so sound quality will be good, but voice quality will not. But in basketball news, we're going to talk about the dominant win over the Suns on Tuesday. We're going to talk about tonight's game against the Philadelphia 76ers. And we're going to talk for the last time, because I'm sure you guys don't care that I keep talking about this, about Edmund Sumner's contract thing, which just passed by. So we actually learned a little about the Pacers' plans coming up for the trade, possibly, or buyout market, or 10 days or something. We learned a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit. We'll get to that last. So let's start with the Suns game, because everything about this game was awesome. I'm not saying it's like so impressive to destroy the Suns at home, but the manner of which they did it is very encouraging. You know, after those struggling three games without Miles, Boston, Toronto, and I'm not remembering the third game, unfortunately, which is killing me. Cleveland, there it is. Seeing two dominant wins against bad teams. I know it was the Knicks and Suns, but one was on the road. Was just super encouraging to me. Like, you should pummel bad teams. That's what good teams do. The Sixers killed the Suns 131-97. And I'm not sure what number's more impressive, 131 or 97. Because in this NBA these days, giving up less than 100 is crazy. But 131 points is 131 points. And this Pacers team never scores that many unless they're playing the Nets. So it was just a great performance from everybody, except for Vic, ironically. Vic was 2 of 11. I'll start with him. I'll start with the negative so everything else is happy. Vic was 2 of 11. I just burped. Vic was 2 of 11 with 6 rebounds and 5 assists, which is the last two parts. His rebounds and assists are good. And I just wrote something about Vic's new offensive role, which is way more passing-oriented and it's working. He's finding his open teammates and creating opportunities for others and in all sorts of ways while the defense focuses on him. But his shot's just not going in. He only had 8 points. He had 4 turnovers because teams are forcing the ball out of his hands. So he, you know, on nights like this one where his shot is flat, he doesn't have it. He just doesn't look as effective because the way he's impacting the game is by letting others impact the game, using his gravity. And that's just not, like, sexy or appealing. I mean, he's still being good. He's just not being the battering ram scorer that he was last year. And last year's Vic was better than this year's Vic. We all know that. But it's just, it's not, the gap's not as big as a scoring gap. You know, it's smaller than that because he's doing other stuff. But everyone else played good. So let's talk about everyone else. Darren Collison hit both of his threes on his way to 15 points and 7 assists. And since December 1st, so when the Pacers started having the best record in the NBA, I believe, since then, Darren Collison's hit 46% of his three-pointers, which is right around the mark he had that led the league last year. They need that from him. They need him to be the guy that shot the ball so well last season. He has not been that guy for the first 2 months of the year. He has been that guy since. And I feel like people still are kind of stagnant on their opinions on Collison, you know, saying he's, you know, not the guy that, not the guy for this team, and maybe not, but he's been pretty good since December 1st, and I think first impressions go too far almost in basketball. If you remember Jeff Teague's season in Indiana, he sucked shooting the ball for the first 10 games and then was pretty good for the last 70 games, but everybody just was like, oh, Jeff Teague sucks at shooting the ball from deep because he was so terrible the first 10 games, even though he was actually okay that year. Same thing with DC this year, I think, is happening. Miles Turner, first game back from injury. Probably should have started with him, if we're being honest. 18 points on only 11 shots, 6 rebounds, 2 blocks on consecutive possessions, too. He was really good in his 27 minutes. Sabonis in his 19 minutes, also very good with 14 points and 8 rebounds. Pretty much just everybody did well. Bojan had 20. Tyreek had 20. That was noteworthy, too. Tyreek had a really good game. And Tyreek's free throw attempt rate is a career low this year, but he did a great job getting to the line in this game. He had 8 free throws. I'm hoping that he can be that guy more often who can draw some contact because he's so contact averse and he misses so many layups because of that. But if he can draw some fouls and get to the line, that would A, help his efficiency, and B, help the team because his drives right now are not doing much of anything. TJ Leaf continues to give okay minutes. He played 11 minutes and didn't suck. He hit half his shots, had two offensive rebounds, didn't turn the ball over. Again, not, you know, Leaf's not like so awesome, but showing these small incremental improvements is good. He was an 18th pick in the draft. Like, we got to give him the time to be something. And this is something. It's not rotation level something yet, but it's the kind of guy you are willing to play 8 to 10 minutes and develop something, which is very, very encouraging considering he was nothing earlier. Every time Corey Joseph has 10 points, that means it's a good game for him because everything else he does every game is almost exactly the same. And Thad. Thad was a team high plus 28, had 12 points on 7 shots and 7 rebounds. So that was all awesome from all the guys who usually play. And then we saw Holiday, O'Quinn, and Alizé for the last 4 minutes. Holiday in 4 minutes had 5 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. Like, this dude filled up the stat sheet in 4 minutes. He is awesome. He was really good. Pull up three, got to the basket, dished an assist to Alizé Johnson, who hit his first NBA three, which was so cool. I jumped at him off my couch. It was a sweet pass from Holiday, too. He was good on D with the blocks and the steal. I just imagine myself in his head when he's like, oh, this guy said I was a bad pick. Ha. I don't actually think that. I like to make fun of myself for being an idiot. O'Quinn missed all three of his shots, which is rough, but he's such a luxury to have. Who cares? And Alizé hit a three, so nothing else matters from this game besides Alizé hit a three. And then defensively, that was all box score stuff. But defensively, the Pacers did a good job containing Ayton. A lot of that's on Turner doing a good job inside. Ayton was 7 of 16. They kind of thwarted him getting the ball. I know 16 shots seems like a lot, but I think he had more than that in their first meeting. They were reluctant to let him get the ball inside, and then they did a good job limiting his second chance opportunities and letting him score at all. They did a good job of pretty much letting the Suns point guards do whatever they wanted. D'Anthony Melton and Elie Okobo can't really do anything. they combined for 12 assists because the Pacers just said, okay, you want to dribble drive and create something, go ahead, or you want to shoot, go ahead. They combined 2 of 12 from the field. Like, they were not great. Devin Booker was 4 of 12. Vic played really good D on him. That's where most of his impact in this game went. They held TJ Warren under 50% shooting. So they did a good job guarding a lot of guys. Troy Daniels came in at the end and was on fire from three and ruined them, only allowing like 90. But they really did a good job on D. Their scheme looked really good. They were forcing the ball out of the middle. They didn't let teams get any open. They didn't let the Suns get any open looks from three. They shot 8 of 27. Overall, just a really effective game. And they forced 19 turnovers. That's a young team to the Suns. So, I mean, some of that is just young, careless errors. But overall, really complete and great performance from the Pacers. You needed to see this after the bad end of the road trip, despite the Knicks game. The Knicks game might get a little overrated. And even for me, they won by 15, but, like, they did not play. I don't feel like they played that well, you know. Anyway, but, yeah, this was a good win over the Suns. They needed it. The Suns stink. They don't have to play the Suns anymore and worry about losing to a crappy team like the Cavs. But next up tonight, the Philadelphia 76ers on TNT. Reggie Miller in the house. Let's talk about it after the break. Pacers, Sixers. I think it's hilarious that every Pacers-Sixers game this season is on national TV. I wish that this would become a rivalry. I want this iteration of the Pacers to have a rival. And they don't because LeBron is in another conference now. The Sixers are 29-16, so creeping up kind of on the Pacers, who also keep winning, though. I think these two teams have the two hardest remaining schedules in the conference, so keeping up with how their records shake out will be fascinating. They just destroyed the Minnesota Timberwolves two nights ago now. 149 they hung on Minnesota. Unbelievable. I don't really know if that was just like an energy game from Jimmy, like, guys, can we please just go kill these guys, or they had a really on night. I didn't watch it because the Pacers were playing, but I need to go back and find a way to see why they were able to put up 149. But yeah, the Sixers are rounding into form this month. It looks like they have 6 wins just to 2 losses, and they need to figure something out because of the 3-star thing. Hasn't been perfect for them. It's not been bad. It just hasn't been perfect. And if you pick any duo of the 3 stars between Simmons, Embiid, and Butler, Simmons and Embiid on the floor without Butler has a better rating than with Butler. And Simmons and Butler has a better rating without Embiid than with Embiid. And Embiid and Butler has a better rating without Simmons than with Simmons. So all the pairs work well together. It's when you get the third guy that it becomes less effective because there's only one ball. And, you know, with the Warriors, the one ball thing works because Steph, KD, and Klay can just be off-ball snipers with the jump shots. But Butler is the best three-point shooter of that trio. And he's hitting them pretty well this year. I think he's at like 40%, but he's not like a great three-point shooter historically. I think for his career, he's probably like hitting one of every three. Embiid's at like 31%, and Simmons, as you know, just doesn't take them. So they don't get the spacing effect there. They don't get what they need around them in the same way that they do when they have like J.J. Redick out there. Even Wilson Chandler's hitting 39% this year. Landry Shamet's hitting 39% this year. Like the extra shooters helps the net rating there. It doesn't necessarily mean it's better because it plays less minutes and you don't have as much talent on the floor. It's just like there's a better fit in that scenario, and that works well. So keep an eye on that. They're going to start all three, and I think their starting lineup now is those three and Wilson Chandler and J.J. Redick. So that's a good group, but then when they you know, they're kind of shallow after that group I just said. Like Mike Muscala, TJ McConnell, and Landry Shamet is the rest of their rotation. That's a rookie and a really tiny point guard and a guy, Mike Muscala, who is really slumping this year. He's shooting under 40% from the field. Sometimes they get Furkan Korkmaz out there because he's allegedly shoot, but he's not shooting well this year. And same with Jonah Bolden at backup center. So their rotation is pretty shallow. At the same time, the guys that help make their fit better need to play a lot. So just expect a heavy minutes, 8-man rotation for them with some sprinkling in at the back end there. But this could get shaken up because they just signed Corey Brewer to a 10-day contract. He played 8 minutes in his debut in that game against Minnesota. So maybe he can help them a little bit. He's an okay shooter and an okay wing defender, but he does add depth for a team that needs it, and that could actually matter in this game. I was going to say that's one key for the Pacers is that depth. Last time their bench was like plus 21 and 22 for Sabonis and Joseph. That was the unit that helped them find a way to win. So keep an eye on that if they can pummel the Sixers bench. Last time they played the Sixers bench was even worse than it will be in this one. They were not fully healthy. If you'll recall, Jimmy Butler did not play. But that is a key. Can the Pacers win those bench minutes? I think they will, but by how much is it enough to get the win? You know, those are things to monitor. From the last game to this game, an easy, low-hanging fruit improvement to succeed better. Do not foul Embiid so much. He gets 10 free throw attempts every game, right? Like, he's Joel Embiid. He's really good at drawing fouls. He's really good at a lot of things in the sport of basketball. But you got to not let him take 16 because he's pretty good from the line, over 80%. So you just can't let him do that. He's an efficient guy when that is the case. That's why he was able to score 40. Some of that's on Turner, who does okay on guys like Embiid sometimes, but not in this game in particular. And then another key for me, it's going to be J.J. Redick. Guys like Redick and Korver, who just fly around and catch and immediately shoot, you know, that they kind of kill the Pacers sometimes because the effort for the Pacers is really good. But if you lose a guy for a second and you can't make up for it with effort, like with Korver and Redick, who just get their shot off so fast, even McDermott when he was not on the Pacers, they tend to have good games against them. If you remember that the first Sixers-Pacers game of 2017-18, Redick went off down the stretch and sealed the game for the Sixers. It was like a 2 or 3 point game before Redick had a monster last minute of the game. So finding a way to stop him will be key. It always is. And then Ben Simmons. How do they deal with Ben Simmons on defense? He's a very good defender who can guard a lot of positions. I think the defensive matchups are going to be obvious. I think Vic will guard Jimmy Butler. I think Miles will guard Joel Embiid. And I think Thad will guard Ben Simmons. And then you just hope DC can do okay on Redick. And you put Bojan on Wilson Chandler and say, okay, that's fine. But on the other end of the floor, there's quite a few advantages for the Sixers in that way. Maybe Bojan can pick on J.J. Redick or Wilson Chandler, but it's going to be hard for them to find mismatches in the starting five, so that's why the bench is so important. Muscala can't guard a potted plant these days. Landry Shamet also cannot guard a potted plant. So getting by those guys, getting those easy points is going to be good or key. Can Tyreek Evans step up? I thought he would last time. He did not. 2 of 11 from the field. But he got to the line 6 times, and that made him be a little more effective. 9 points on 11 shots is bad, but it's not atrocious considering he got 5 of 6 from the line. which falls in line with what I said about the Suns game. Tyreek, can you get to the line? That would really, really help him. And then Turner not fouling. Part of that is the don't foul Embiid stuff, but he was only able to play 16 minutes. They had to get O'Quinn in there just to get Sabonis a breather last time. So it's pretty much going to be play the same game as you did in early December, mid-December. But with Butler back, it'll be harder to do. That's the game plan. Smother Embiid. If it happens, it happens. But he turned the ball over 6 times. You know, he wasn't perfect. Let Simmons do some stuff outside of 10 feet. Don't worry about him that much. He was 7-15 from the field. And then chase Redick around. He was 4-12 from 3. And then if Butler beats you, Butler beats you. They're a really talented team, but you can win those bench minutes. So keeping the stars at bay the best you can, I think, is the game plan for the Pacers here. Should be a good one. I do not know who's going to win because the road team has won every game in the series so far this year. But it should be a fun one. So get ready. Stay tuned. Primetime television. Get excited to hear Reggie Miller, who was a fantastic player and an unsolid announcer. With that, though, let's transition to one more thing, kind of fun, kind of trade-related, kind of buyout market-related, kind of free agency-related. So let's get to it. It's about Edmund Sumner. So Sumner, I talked a while, like 2 episodes, and I didn't mean to do that. I kind of completely forgot I did it the first time. I talked about how on January 15th, two-way contracts, it's the last day you can sign them. January 15th came and went, and the Pacers did not add anybody on a two-way contract. What does this mean? Well, it seems like the answer should be not super much, but the answer is kind of more than you think. So, in theory, yes, the Pacers could still convert Edmund Sumner to the pro team, but they're not going to because the Pacers aren't a team that's going to waste roster spots. They have a plan for this kind of stuff. They would have converted him before this date if they thought he was going to be a key for them down the stretch. So the plan is not to have Sumner with the pros this year. That is what it is. What that means is Sumner cannot play in the playoffs. I don't think he would have anyway, just because the rotation gets smaller and he is not ready for that at all. But it's just a fact. It's a noteworthy addendum to this discussion. But he can still practice with the team. He can travel and do all that stuff. He just cannot play in games. He has to be in the inactive list. But this means the Pacers do still have a roster spot, and it means Sumner is going to be a restricted free agent in the summer if they offer him a qualifying offer. I don't know how many of you truly understand restricted free agency that listen, but if they offer him a qualifying offer, that means Sumner will get this offer from the Pacers that sent him into restricted free agency. That offer is a 1-year deal with $80,000 guaranteed. And the salary is the minimum for the rest that isn't guaranteed. So if he doesn't get a deal from the Pacers or another team, he could just sign that and then be on the team anyway, and they maybe just waive him if they don't want him. I don't know why they wouldn't want him, but that's how that would work. But that guarantees they can keep him and either negotiate with him or match anything another team signs him to. So Sumner will probably be back. It's just that is the upcoming situation for him, and I imagine he gets like a 1 or 2 year deal at like $2 million a year or something like that. I'd be cool with that. The open roster spot. Bing, bing. The Sixers, who they play tonight and I just talked about, signed Corey Brewer to a 10-day contract because they had an open roster spot. 10-day guys count for just a prorated minimum, but any team can sign a 10-day guy. And Corey Brewer was a guy that I kind of liked for the Pacers. So, unfortunately, he is not on the table at the moment. The Rockets just used a 10-day to sign James Dunnelly to be a 3-point shooter for them. Apparently, he did a good job for them in their game against the Nets tonight, which they lost, by the way. The Nets are surging, even though they lost to the Pacers in the month that they surged. So, this means the Pacers could sign, like a guy that I like is Luke Babbitt to that spot for a 10-day or 2 10-days. See how he fits. He's a really, really good shooter. He's a stretch four. Pritchard loves those dudes. So he could fit right in right away. And stretch fours take no time to acclimate. Or they could maybe get another wing just for depth purposes. So keeping that roster spot open without putting Sumner on it just adds to their number of options. They can also add a player in a trade. Like they could trade someone for 2 guys, and then that would be legal. That could be, you know, a way to trade like an expiring contract for, another deal with 2 years on it and a little asset or something like that. So that just opens up, it keeps their options more flexible. Last year, they signed Trey McKinney-Jones from the Mad Ants to a 10-day. I don't think that kind of stuff's out of the question, too, like giving Mad Ants dudes 10-day little promotions just to reward them for good play. I know Stephon Hicks has been playing pretty good for the Mad Ants. Everyone else who plays good for the Mad Ants is like a Pacers player. that's not entirely true, but most of the guys who play well for the Mad Ants this year have been Pacers. There have been other guys, though. So I think maybe you'll see a 10-day for depth purposes if someone gets hurt or something, because why not, you know, keep the team strong and good when the schedule gets a little tougher. But ultimately, I bet they just wait till the buyout market and add someone for the rest of the season. I don't know who that's going to be, who even is going to be available, but that's what I would look ahead to. Now that we know that they're not going to use that roster spot on Sumner, we can look ahead. So that's all I got for today, guys. This game tonight is going to be super exciting with Reggie Miller back in the house. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'm sorry that my voice isn't perfect here. Hope you have a great rest of your day, and Adam will talk about this game tomorrow, so stay tuned for that.